Good morning. You have tuned in to the KRFY Morning Show. It's Wednesday, November 6th. My name is Jack Peterson, and I'm here with your usual Wednesday morning co-host, Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine, a little tired.
Did you have a late night?
I was up late last night.
For what purpose?
I was here at the radio station until just about midnight, and then found it difficult to fall asleep last night once I got home, actually.
Yeah, we had an election. I think everybody probably knows that. We're going to run through the results, especially in the state and local races here.
Let's do it. Let's kick things off right away.
We should mention we have a third body in the room.
Good morning, Zach.
Good morning.
Zach Hagedorn is here, editor of the Sandpoint Reader, and this comprises the day after election analysis team here at KRFY. Locally, the results are in, and it's a clean sweep for the Republicans. In Legislative District 1, for Senator, these results, I'll read the full results for the Legislative District. This includes Boundary County as well as Bonner County. Jim Woodward wins handily in District 1 in his race for Senate against the independent Dan Rose. Jim Woodward will be returning as a state senator. He had not been serving as state senator for the last 2 years after he was defeated in the Republican primary by Scott Herndon in the 2022 contest. He beat Herndon this year narrowly in the Republican primary and now returns for the next session as our senator from District 1. The vote total was, including both counties, 23,402 votes for Woodward to 7,286 votes for Dan Rose. Our two representatives, seat A, will be filled by Mark Sauter, the incumbent. He received 77.7% of the vote and defeated Karen Mattei, the Democratic challenger for that seat, who came in with 22.3% of the vote. The totals by the numbers, 24,189 votes for Sauter and 6,923 votes for Karen Mattei. Of the legislative district races, Sauter received the most votes of any candidate. The incumbent will return, and he got more votes than either Woodward or Cornell Razor in seat B. Speaking of seat B, Cornell Razor did win that race as well. The Republican candidate and very recently the Republican incumbent, although he didn't spend any time in Boise, he was filling in. He filled in the tail end of Sage Dixon's term. Cornell Razor, the Republican, won with 71.3% of the vote to Catherine Larson's 28.7. The totals for Razor were 22,565 votes against Catherine Larson's 9,067. So Larson had the biggest turnout of any challenger by a few thousand votes. Catherine Larson got 9,000 in the county. Here we had a couple of county commissioner seats up for election, and as I mentioned, the Republicans won them both handily. Brian Domke, the Republican, won a seat in County Commission District 1, more or less the southern part. He comes from the southern part of the county, although everybody in the county can vote for any of the county commissioners. This two-year term will be filled by Brian Domke, who got 20,000 votes, 20,127 to be precise. That's 70% of the electorate, to Steve Johnson's 8,428 votes, about 29.5% of the electorate. And in the county commission seat, the District 3, Ron Korn, who has been sitting since September in the seat formerly occupied by Luke Ammett. Ron Korn won with 69.8% of the vote, a very close to Domke's margin, over the independent Glenn LeFay's 30% of the vote. That the totals there, 19,368 for Korn and 8,365 for LeFay. So in all the partisan elections locally this year, the Republicans won them all and won them all pretty handily. Not entirely a surprising result, but that wasn't all that was on the ballot, was it? I'll turn it over to you, Chris. What else did people vote on?
Well, of course, here? Proposition 1 was a probably the most contested in the ballot measure that had the most interest. That's the open primaries and ranked choice voting initiative. It lost here by over 70%, I think. But that kind of mirrored what happened statewide for Prop 1. Not all the counties in the state have reported yet, but with 42 of 44 counties reporting, the no's were 69.7% and the yes's were 30.3%. And also for the Idaho Constitutional Amendment, the statewide vote there with 42 counties out of 44 reporting is 65% were in favor of that one, and 35% voted against it. And that amends the Constitution to provide that individuals who aren't citizens of the United States may not be qualified electors in any can't vote in any elections within the state of Idaho. And statewide, Jack, you might have a better handle on what happened there. I guess the Democrats lost a few seats around in the legislature around the state.
I believe you are correct.
What I saw is that they lost 4 seats.
Yeah.
Democrats lost 4 seats to Republicans in the state.
I think you're right. The closely watched races, there's in District 6, Dan Foreman's race against Julia Parker. Foreman prevailed, the Republican incumbent. And also in District 6, Lori McCann, the Republican, won. Foreman's race was pretty close, but not really that close, actually. I think before I went to bed last night, it looked like he was trailing. Not the case in the end. Let's see, and I believe in District 26, there was a... in District 26 for Senator, there was a good chance, actually, that the Democrat Ron Taylor was going to come out ahead because of an independent candidate running to the right of the more mainstream Republican who they thought might split the vote. The vote was indeed split, but not enough. Lori likely will be going to the Senate. I think she's formerly was a member of the state House of Representatives. She'll now be serving as senator from District 26, the Republican Lori Likely. I'm trying to remember what the other close races were. I think there was in District 15. That went Republican as well, and yeah, most of the close races that we were watching, I think, went for the Republican.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So there's a couple of local measures we should mention as well, and one is at the city of Pondre, the local option, 1% sales tax. It received a majority, 50.4% to. Excuse me, it did not. It only received 49.6%. In favor, with 263 in favor, 267 were opposed. That's a 50.4%, but it actually required a 60% approval to be passed. Same thing, almost the same exact sort of a split on the City of Sandpoint local option, 1% sales tax that was proposed within the city limits here of Sandpoint. In favor, actually, was 50%. Against it were 49.9%. But again, that required a 60% approval to pass. So neither one of those local option taxes are going to go forward. And in West Bonner County, the school district 83 levy there, 52.4% voted against it. That's 4,332 in favor with 3,921. That's a 47% in favor. So the supplemental levy for 1.1 million there is not going to be approved.
Yeah.
So.
Well, hey, that kind of mirrors, well, I was going to say that it reflects a lot of the trends that we saw nationally as well.
Yeah, in case somebody out there did not hear, the former President Trump did prevail last night. The last I saw, Wisconsin came in this morning. They got counted, and so he has 277, at least 277 electoral votes. He needs 270 to win. Harris has 224. There are five states still not counted as of about 15 minutes ago. And in the Senate, the U.S. Senate, the Republicans picked up at least West Virginia, Ohio, and Montana. There's so they have at least a 52-48 majority. They may have more. There's a few undecided races there still. And in the House, there are 54 seats that are not yet decided. So that one is still a coin flip at the moment as to how the House may go for Republicans or Democrats.
Right. Yeah, I'm trying to bring up those races now because I think that one, that could go to, that could go to the Democrats, which would make it an interesting split on the national
level. It could. The last I saw, the Democrats had picked up one seat, mm-hmm. but obviously with 54 seats, races not yet decided,
right?
That could go either direction.
Yeah.
And given the fact that the overall trend, of course, was to the Republicans last mm-hmm. night, it's hard to imagine that they might not get in the House as well. Mm-hmm. Zach Hagedone, editor of the Reader, can you please explain all these results to us?
What have we learned?
Can I explain them? I think that when we talk about the trends, you're seeing similar sort of vote breakdowns, Republicans and conservative causes winning, in the 60-70% range. I think we have a pretty consistent break of 25-30-40% maybe for Democrats, supporting Democrats, supporting Proposition 1, supporting the levy. So I think we finally sort of isolated this percentage of our community, both, locally, statewide, and maybe even nationally, who breaks sort of liberal, quote unquote. I know there's been a lot of talk locally in the county among the Central Committee and among like right-wing conservative activists that there's all these rhinos. We've never had an idea of how many rhinos there truly are, but this election, I think, finally shows us what that percentage is. And it's about 30% of the county. Across the board.
That aren't Republican.
That aren't Republican. Yeah. Those are voters that you don't see come out to the polls because there's usually not a Democrat running who's a viable candidate. But with Karen Mattei and Catherine Larson, we actually did have Democrats who ran actual campaigns.
Yeah, they campaigned hard. They were actually going for it. Games, but they weren't just placeholders.
But they still lost, Karen Mattei, 24.43% in Boundary County, isn't it? No, Bonner County. And then Catherine Larson, 31.26. So that's kind of within the same sort of range. Despite all the efforts they did, those are the voters who were going to vote for a Democrat in the general election. And I imagine that if we saw no Democrats run in the next cycle, then that percentage would probably go to whoever they wanted to support in the Republican primary, since the primaries will continue to be closed after Prop 1 failed by, again, that sort of same kind of 30%-ish margin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, here and statewide.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't have a number of total ballots cast in the election, an official number, but just adding up this, say, the House seat B race, there were a total of 24,809 ballots cast in Bonner County between the Democrat and the Republican, the only two on the ticket. So it's probably pretty close. There's, the number's probably a little higher than 24,000, maybe 25,000 ballots cast. In 2020, I looked that up, and there were a total of 27,681 ballots cast. So I think we saw a small decline in, well, that's not even that small if those numbers are accurate. That's like a 8% fewer voters actually cast a ballot in this race, which it's kind of interesting because it was such a
contested.
So contested, yeah. At least, you know, and usually the presidential race really, when it's hotly contested, really brings people out to vote.
I mean, there might have been some burnout from the primary. I don't know. I'm looking at these numbers again from Bonner County, and I'm intrigued by the fact that Jim Woodward, you know, in just the Bonner County results, got about the same sort of vote count as Mark Sauter. And then Cornell Razor had a little bit less, but still within the same range. You know, it was between, you know, Cornell got 17,053 and, you know, Sauter and Woodward were both in the 18,400-ish range. Now, with Woodward, he was sort of like the candidate that I think mainstream Republicans and also, you know, people who tend to vote Democratic would have supported, right? As opposed to Dan Rose, the independent challenger there, who is a well-known, very fiery conservative activist. So he wasn't attracting any of these, you know, so-called rhinos or Democrat voters or anybody, really. I mean, but he still did pretty well. I mean, Dan got 5,398 votes in Bonner County, which is comparable to, you know, the votes that Karen Mattei got.
Yeah, just a little bit less than the Democrats.
So, again, I mean, if my theory is correct, that you can sort of extrapolate from these numbers the population of people in the county who vote sort of Democrat or are quote-unquote rhinos, then you don't see that really developing for Jim Woodward.
Yeah.
I mean, you would expect Jim, I mean, if those people had gone for Jim, then you would expect his numbers to be much higher than they are. But, you know, they're not. And I can almost assure you that Karen Mattei voters and Catherine Larson voters weren't also voting for Dan Rose for Senate.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to know if anybody did. There are, you know, I think sometimes people will go in and without knowing, without really knowing the candidates, will vote, will kind of instinctually vote for an independent because they, you know, just as a protest against the two-party system. But I'm not saying I know anybody who did that specifically. You're right. I think those who were paying attention would have known.
Right.
Obviously, Rose was on the opposite side of the political spectrum from Mattei and Larson.
Well, and I think what was really interesting about this election locally and in the legislative district was how important those party labels were during the campaign. Trying to determine exactly who's a real conservative, who's a rhino, you know, who's a Democrat, who believes in the party platform to this degree, who's been censured, who's not been censured, who has the support of the Central Committee, who supports the Idaho Freedom Foundation, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, labels were a big part of this. I mean, they always are, but this election in particular. And I think what these results sort of put to rest is perhaps this myth that gets spread, especially by, you know, people on the right, that the community has been infiltrated by leftists from, you know, out of state, you know, California liberals are coming here to californicate Idaho. You know, it's like, no, it doesn't look that way to me on these results.
Yeah. It's funny. I think, you mentioned the, to Californifying Idaho. I think, of the, I don't remember, I don't want to say for sure, but I think at least two, if not three of the, Republican candidates who won in our local area, I think were from, were born in California.
Yeah.
But they're all conservative.
But they're not California liberals.
No.
They're California.
No, I think we're getting California conservatives as much absolutely. As liberals, I think, for sure.
But I do think that these results do put to rest that myth that liberals from California are pouring in here. It's conservatives from California, like 100%. And that's not even a subjective statement, I don't think.
No. A disappointing night for the Democrats, who were never really considered locally considered likely to win But as you mentioned, they did put up two serious candidates, much more so than in years past.
Right.
And the fact that the numbers didn't really change from years past, compared to even when they had placeholder candidates there, it has to be demoralizing for the Democratic Party trying to establish some kind of a bulkhead in North Idaho.
Well, I think it's clear even in the county level, like so the county commissioner level, like you can't expect to get more than 30% of the vote if you run as a Democrat or if you run as an independent against a mainline conservative candidate. Like, so we now have a ceiling that we've established.
Yeah. 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 Cause one of those races, there was an independent versus a Republican
Glenn LaFay,
yeah.
Commissioner District 3.
And he got 30%.
30.16.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. No one broke that level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it really does mirror what's going on statewide. Mm-hmm. You know, I just dug up a couple more races here. So in the Congressional District 1, that's the Congressional District we're in, Russ Fulcher won statewide with 71% of the vote. Kaylee Peterson, the Democrat there, won lost with 25.2% of the vote. So, you know, again, 70% went Republican. District 2, that's the eastern Idaho district, more or less, southern and eastern. Mike Simpson, who's like been like 13 or 14.
I feel like he was born in that office. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, he's been there that many terms. He got 61.5% of the vote, and David Roth, the Democrat there, got 30.9%. There was a Libertarian who, Todd Corsetti, who got 5.2% of the vote. That's pretty big for Libertarians, actually.
And I'm sure that took from Simpson's.
Yeah, I'm sure it came from Simpson. People that felt Simpson wasn't conservative enough.
Well, and Simpson's his big Achilles heel among the conservatives in his party is his idea about breaching the dams.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yeah. Taking out the dams on the Snake River. Mm-hmm. And presidential results statewide, here in Idaho, Trump got 67.1% of the vote. Kamala Harris got 30.2% of the vote. And that's pretty similar to what we had here. Actually, he did better here in Bonner County. Trump got 72% of the vote, and Kamala Harris got 25.4% of the vote.
Still in that magic range, you know, 20 to 35 or 20 to 30%. You know,
yeah.
Proposition 1. I think a lot of people thought it was going to be close. I thought it was going to be a close race. It was quite a blowout against Proposition 1.
Right.
And they had a very well organized campaign, I think, those in favor, and some big names from both sides of the aisle in favor of it. I know that I saw plenty of commercials for Proposition 1. They were spending money to get that measure passed, but it had the same margin. And that's interesting because there's no R next to the name.
No.
Proposition 1 there. So people were informed to some extent about how they were going to vote on Prop 1.
I think against. The results there, you know, basically 70% said no, 30% said yes. I mean, the Republicans were, you know, pretty strongly opposed to that overall. And that kind of mirrors what we saw with the vote everywhere.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I had some conversations yesterday ahead of the closing of the polls with some folks, and, you know, people who were well informed, and they even said, like, look, I didn't get Prop 1.
Yeah.
And these were people who admitted to me that they voted for it, but they said, you know, it took me weeks to figure this out because, you know, they didn't understand how the system worked. They said that the ballot language was unclear. They were in favor of the idea of, you know, open primaries, the idea that you can vote for anybody you want to.
Mm-hmm.
It was the ranked choice voting portion of it that got them.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't figure out how that worked mathematically. And I was speaking to someone who, I'm not going to name them, but a highly educated individual in the community who said that, you know, they had to spend about 3 weeks sort of mulling this over in their minds. trying to figure out how does the ranked choice thing work? Like, is it possible that the winner actually becomes the loser? And, you know, how do the majorities break down? Can you recount it? So, I mean, if even people who ultimately ended up voting for it didn't understand it and it took them that long to get it, then there was something probably wrong with the way that that was presented to them. And I mean, this person I was speaking to was actually echoing a lot of the points that you hear that I heard the anti Prop 1 people making over and over again.
Yeah. I mean, there is a ranked choice voting movement that I think has been afoot nationwide for now at least a decade or so, but I hadn't heard any serious motion towards ranked choice voting out here until this initiative was coming up before us. So it was a two-part initiative that there was a lot it was a lot for a voter to educate themselves on all at once.
And that two-part component to it, you know, was challenged by Attorney General Rebel Labrador. But ultimately that challenge was unsuccessful.
Right.
So I think that it probably will be represented at some point, unless Dorothy Moon has her way. She's the head of the Idaho Republican Party, who last night, apparently, according to the Moscow Pullman Daily News, spoke at a watch party saying that we're not ever going to let Reclaim Idaho bring another initiative forward. So that's what the Idaho Republican Party thinks about.
That's interesting.
About Reclaim Idaho and its initiatives.
Right.
And I have dug up some results. They're not all 100% complete. But it looks like ranked choice voting in these other six states that were considering that or are changing their primaries are going down as well. Oregon is voting no on their measures 117 for ranked choice voting for primaries and general elections. It's losing there by 59% to 40%. Nevada has a question 3 for a top 4 all party primaries and ranked choice voting in general elections, and it has failed 54% to 45%. Missouri passed a 68% to 31% voted yes on a measure, an amendment that would prohibit ranked choice voting, amendment to, I think, their constitution. Idaho, of course, we voted no, 69.4% to 30.6% on ranked choice voting and open primaries. Washington D.C. Looks like it's the single yes. It will allow independents to vote in primaries election and bring and institute ranked choice voting in Washington D.C. And it won 72% to 27%. Colorado, however, had a top 4 all primary. All party primaries and ranked choice voting in general elections, and it got a no at a 55 to 44% margin. So ranked choice voting, and then in Alaska, it's very close right now on their measure 2, which would basically repeal the ranked choice voting that they instituted, with 75.8% of their votes cast right now. That's 51% to repeal it, 49% to keep it. But again, there's 25% of their votes out there. That's pretty close. So that one may or may not, they may or may not keep ranked choice voting.
It's hard. And of course, Alaska being the great example that has been used throughout the whole Prop 1 campaign in Idaho is like, look at Alaska. It's worked great there.
Yeah.
But apparently, you know, the voters are feeling otherwise.
I think it was close when it won, and of course the same people that opposed it then are going to oppose it now, and maybe some of the people that that went for it before are going to vote against it, but still there's 25% of their votes still out, so that one's still up in the air.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty close. Let's talk a little bit about these local levies, these local option taxes. Starting in Sandpoint, perhaps the most impactful to most of our listeners is the local option. There was a local option tax on the ballot. A 1% tax was proposed. It was unanimously approved for the ballot by city council, I believe. Yeah, right. and it would have been a 1% sales tax in effect for 25 years, and it would have been earmarked specifically towards the improvement of roads and transportation. The votes came in as literally seven votes more in favor than opposed. However, you needed 60% of the vote to get over the finish line there. They would have needed another 200 some individual votes to pass that local option sales tax. So that will not be going into effect. Do we have anything? What do we say about that? What does that teach us about voters in the city of Sandpoint?
I think that my theory, and again, I'm just looking at these numbers this morning myself, so I haven't really got a chance to talk to anyone yet, but my sort of off-the-cuff theory would be that the time frame for that tax scared people away.
25 years.
25 years. I think a lot of voters might have looked at that and said, "Whoa, I'm not going to sign up for a tax that I'm going to have to pay for 25 years."
Yeah.
I think that was sort of maybe ambitious on the part of the city to try to bake that into the pie. I know why they did it. I mean, the idea being that we're going to lose our resort city status very soon, if we haven't already, sort of like demographically, but the next census,
when the population goes over 10,000, you can't have a local option sales tax.
So we're going to lose this tool almost assuredly by the next census. So I think the strategy here was to use it now, extend it out for as long as we possibly can, that, you know, reasonably can, 25 years, so that we can continue to reap the benefits far into the future, even though that we wouldn't be able to do it again. So.
Yeah,
but I do think that was kind of a sticker shock sort of thing for some voters. This is just my theory. I also think there's a general anti-tax mood. I mean, people don't like taxes generally, but I think there's a especially virulent sort of anti-tax strain in the community lately. You see it across the board in Ponderay. You see it with the West Bonner levy. Like the voters, at least a majority, and in some cases a slim majority, don't want to pay anything more than they're already paying for the services that they have.
Ponderay, of course, also, they were basically renewing their 1% local option tax that had been in place for the last 5 years. And it barely won 4 years ago when it was on the ballot. It won by like one or two votes.
Right.
And this time it is failing more solidly because they didn't even reach the 50% threshold. There, it was 267 opposed to the tax and 263 in favor. So it failed just straight up, but it needed 60%. So they were way off what they needed there. And that one's kind of interesting to me because there's these big obvious things that they accomplished with the current tax. The Field of Dreams, and also getting access to the lakeshore, which they got a project underway that Ponderay has always been partitioned off from their lakeshore by the railroad tracks, even though the city owns a bunch of lakeshore there, and people just go across the tracks right now, but it's actually trespassing when they do that.
Right.
It's
unsafe and dangerous.
It's unsafe. Because there's a lot of trains there, and trains can sneak up on you, believe it or not. But the other interesting thing to me about Ponderay is they have all these big retail stores there. You know, you have Walmart, you have Home Depot, and so much of that tax was being paid by people that aren't city residents.
Right.
By far, most of that tax was being paid by people that aren't city residents. So it was one way for the city to, you know, get some of that, all the money that's spent in their city, spent on the city. So I'm not sure about the logic between those who, other than what, as you just said, Zach, there's just an anti-tax sentiment.
Yeah.
You know, any tax.
And I don't think that a lot of these voters probably aren't aware that most of the revenue gathered in Ponderay goes to Boise.
Almost all of it. They gain million. I don't have the numbers for me, but there's millions in sales tax that are sent to Boise, and the city gets back like $180,000 a year.
Right. It's pitiful.
It's ridiculous.
And it's so frustrating for, you know, City Hall in Ponderay to see this, where they have so much economic activity and they taste almost none of it. And then to see a vote like this where you've got, you know, people who come out against a tax that essentially is trying to keep their money locally instead of benefiting, you know, what they might consider to be, you know, the big government down in Boise.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
No, basically now we're just going to throw that 1% down to the big government in Boise. So nice job, voters.
So my observation on both of these local option taxes is that when Sandpoint passed it, 6 years ago, and then it expired. It's been more than that, like 8 years ago, and the money was used to improve Memorial Field and rebuild the grandstands. A pretty dramatic improvement there. They had a citizen group that supported it and was very active in campaigning for that local option tax, and it passed by like 71% of the people. It handily passed. The first time in Sandpoint. And in Ponderay, when they passed there, they had a very active city planner who was out doing a lot of campaigning as a citizen for it. You know, as these entities cannot campaign themselves, but citizen groups can campaign on behalf of these measures. The city governments themselves can't. They just have to be neutral and put the information out about what's proposed. But there were no citizen groups getting behind either one of these and getting out and doing the work, campaigning, getting information out, and going door to door as they did in the previous times when these taxes had passed. So I think that's part of what happened here.
I think you're right. Although I do think Ponderay did a better job, honestly, of spreading the word about their like renewal. You know, they had the Neighbor Days celebration in September. And like you were saying, Chris, like they have these huge, big, like accomplishments that they've done. I mean, they've got an ice rink project going on. They got the Field of Dreams, which has universally been applauded.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I haven't heard anyone say anything bad about Field of Dreams. Mm-hmm. So I think people were more aware of that one and could see like vivid information about like how it was benefiting the community. City of Sandpoint, on the other hand, they didn't do, I don't think, as good a job of outreach. They sent out a flyer. You know, I got one in my mailbox.
kind of poorly designed. Big fat card with all this
just text
you have to read through. And they
talked about it in meetings. You know, I know that the mayor had gone on the radio here and talked about it. We'd done articles about it in the paper, and the he did some things on it. But that was really the extent of it. And they didn't make the case very well for this.
Yeah, I imagine both of these may come back around.
I would guarantee you that the city of Sandpoint one will.
Yeah, and I think the Ponderay as well. And in Ponderay, there's only, you know, 530 people voted. Mm-hmm. If you can't have individual conversations, you can have individual conversations with every voter and kind of lay out the case, and maybe they can win some votes that way.
I was just looking at that exact statistic, that it would have been a matter of flipping about 22 individual votes would have changed it from would have made it a pass.
Mm-hmm. You kind of got them all to sweet lose.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I mean, you can't buy him dinner, but you could at least get him there and talk to him.
Yeah.
But I mean,
I don't know. Elon Musk can give away $1 million a day to voters.
Apparently, you know, laws don't really matter anymore, who knows? Yeah.
We're going to have to get some experts into the radio station or some people on the ground in Priest River to talk about what's going on out in West Bonner County. The school district failed to pass their supplemental levy, which would have been just for 1 year. People who've been paying attention to the news here in North Idaho know that the West Bonner County School District has been a major point of conversation, to say the very least. And they're financially in pretty dire straits out there. This would have helped the school district a great deal to meet their budgetary needs. What they're going to do now, I would only be speculating. Do you guys have any idea how West Bonner County is going to move forward, seeing this levy fail, how their school district will be?
Well, I mean, they've already talked about closing down schools, consolidating schools. I would imagine that conversation is going to continue with even more drastic measures, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're probably waking up and sort of rubbing their eyes and trying to figure this out as much as anybody else. But I think that the reason you might see this levy fail in the way that it did is that, again, there's that tax revolt mentality. But mm-hmm. And I'm going to say it right out. I mean, in West Bonner County School District, there is a contingent of people who live in that area who don't want that school district to exist. Mm-hmm. Like, they want to see it close. Like, mm-hmm. they don't want it to be there. They want it to be replaced with some kind of private entity. Mm-hmm. We saw this push manifested through that sort of bizarre failed Superintendent Brandon Durst episode, where he was essentially a plant sent here from, you know, out of area conservative right-wing forces to, I think, basically run the district into the ground intentionally. And I think that this is manifesting here again. Mm-hmm. This is the population of people in that county or that district who, A, don't like taxes of any kind, so there's always going to be that, but B, just want the district to fail. Mm-hmm. Because they want it to be replaced with something.
They don't believe in public education. Right. Yeah,
and that mirrors a larger push down in Boise mm-hmm. to get rid of the Blaine Amendment, which is an amendment to the Idaho Constitution that prohibits state tax dollars to be put toward private education.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been sort of the ring that everyone's running for, you know, down in Boise. All the right wing legislators is to get enough support to get that Blaine Amendment removed, so they can start funneling public tax money toward private education, which is, you know, code for private Christian education. And West Bonner has always sort of been their test ground for this. And you saw that with Brandon Durst, and now you're seeing it with this opposition to the levy. So I don't necessarily think that these are all votes in good faith. Mm-hmm. I think these are strategic votes that are serving a much larger agenda.
Mm-hmm. It was a pretty modest ask. It was a one-year levy for $1.1 million. It's a relatively small amount. And I don't know what the impact on property taxes would have been, but I can't imagine it would have been very much when it's spread out over that entire western mm-hmm. Bonner County district. They're pretty firmly in, you know, opposed to financing that school.
Mm-hmm. I was reading some candidate questionnaires to particularly down in District 26, I think, where there was that three-way race with the conservative Christian and who was running to the right of the more mainstream Republican candidate. She got 11% of the vote, I think, but not enough to swing the race to the Democrats. But she was actually also opposed to any government funding of conservative Christian schools because of she didn't want the government's hands in the schooling that she thought was most appropriate. So
mm-hmm.
that's it. Just an alternate take. There's sometimes you find strange bedfellows in politics,
right?
Opposed to.
I think we're going to see a lot of strangeness over the next couple of weeks, months, and years.
Yeah. I was watching plenty of, news analysis of the national race last night. And it was occurring to me how much people were focused on the horse race leading up to it. That's been a constant complaint for basically my whole lifetime is what you would say is political journalism amounts to tracking polls.
Yeah.
I think we are fortunate in this area to have a news media, perhaps just because we can't afford polling, but,
that is true.
But I will say that all the coverage of, in your fine publication, Zach, and in the Daily Bee, it all focuses on the candidates and the issues. There is no ability to focus on the campaigns. You have to the voters have to really just educate themselves and decide what they want to do, not necessarily what they think how they think the strategy is prevailing one way or another.
I mean, we do like to think that that's useful. Mm-hmm. And I think it is for some people, but there were some other points made last night in some of the analysis that I was watching sort of on the national race, but I think it also holds true locally, is that Americans live in very different information ecosystems.
Mm-hmm.
Right. People have the ability, especially today, you know, with the technology that we have with social media and, you know, streaming services, like you can really curate the information and the news that you get to your own interests and your and your own biases. Mm-hmm. And I think we see that play out a lot nationally, you know, with people who just didn't buy the narrative, you know, or didn't even hear the narrative, perhaps, that the Harris-Waltz campaign was spreading. And that also leads to people just being totally confused about why anyone would vote for Donald Trump mm-hmm. a second time, you know, after everything that's happened with the, you know, the felony convictions, with, you know, all the sexual misconduct allegations.
The insurrection.
The insurrection. The list goes on and on why he would be an appealing candidate to a lot of people.
Those things would just totally rule out any other candidate I've ever seen on the ballot. Yeah.
We've only had one other president who's even been elected to two non-consecutive terms, mm-hmm. and that was Grover Cleveland, you know, mm-hmm. who everyone, of course, remembers as one of the greatest presidents in American history. I think that the horse race is appealing to people because it feels like a sports event.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's very unfortunate that this is how most Americans like to watch politics, as a sporting event.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to talk about issues. They don't want to think about, you know, candidates' personalities so much. They want to dig into, you know, like the morality of a candidate, perhaps. They just want mm-hmm. to see their team win.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
Well, I don't know about that. Obviously, with the definite rightward tilt that we saw. Right. There's got to be a lot of people that are making a decision, not so much on team as on policies, right?
The
economy, right? Mm-hmm. And inflation, right?
Or what they perceive to be the economy and inflation.
Well, yeah, right. the economy actually, compared to the rest of the world, is really good. There are a lot of indicators, you know, low. The inflation rates really come down. There's low unemployment. The stock market has been
the economy is better than it was during Trump's administration.
It is now, question. But the inflation moved all the prices up, and everybody's feeling that, right? The mm-hmm. the higher cost of just about everything. And I think they voted against that. And then the other big thing, I thought there were two other big ones. One was immigration and the border. And I mean, even people that are sympathetic to the plight of these people that are trying to come in, seeing the images of these people just walking across the border through these holes in the border wall and just being, you know, hauled off to, I'm not sure where they wind up in the country, but it feels like the border is open, even though it's not actually open. There's that sense. And that galvanized a lot of people, I think, the whole immigration and border issue. And the third thing that was kind of surprising to me was reproductive rights.
Right.
I thought that was going to really bring out a stronger vote by women that would be largely, you know, anti-Trump. Mm-hmm. But that did not materialize.
Mm-hmm. There was a kind of a theory that there was going to be sort of a secret vote among women who were otherwise polling for Trump, that once they got in the election box, what do we call that?
The
ballot box, the polls. Yeah, that might go the other way. Florida, I know, I just off the top of my head, their ballot measure to protect abortion rights in Florida failed. Mm-hmm. I think he got 58% of the vote, so, you know, a majority, but not enough to clear the 60%.
One of the themes that struck me last night, watching multiple different news channels, you know, as I'm watching the results live, I heard it across the board, was that, you know, Hispanic males voted in much higher numbers for Trump than were expected.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that to be interesting, that, you know, Trump has been such a opponent of immigration, especially from, you know, Mexico and from South America, you know, from Hispanic countries.
Mm-hmm.
And has said some really just outrageously offensive things about mm-hmm. the people who come from those places. And then to see that voting population in the United States come out in such big numbers for him, I think has some people scratching their heads. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think that there is an element in American politics where and it's happened before in history, where when you hammer on the issue of immigration, you attack an immigrant group to such a degree that the people who are from that group who've already established themselves in the country don't want to be associated with that group. And so then they vote, you know, against the newcomers.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to be seen as part of that issue.
Yeah.
And also, of course, you know, there's a strong Catholic community within that voting group, which is also strongly anti-abortion, which would feed into some of those other measures, you know, related to reproductive rights.
Well, I just got a text and a comment on what we're saying here. And the text is, perhaps it was the men who didn't vote for reproductive rights. You guys just blamed the women.
Oh,
I think young men came out much more than expected, particularly young men.
Well, and that was a strategy on the Trump campaign's part. I mean, they had Don Jr. going out there literally saying, men, get off your butts and vote, right?
Yeah, and they were going to all these influencers and podcast guys like Joe Rogan, and they really worked that. And there was a lot of skepticism that young guys who don't vote would still not vote, but they did, in fact, apparently come out to vote. So, the men have no question are definitely part of the of what happened last night. Although it's going to be interesting to see what the gender breakdown by party is, because
we're not going to know that for
We're not going to know that for a while. And also, it looks like right now that Trump may win the popular vote.
That's also surprising. And it was kind of surprising to him. I mean, if you watched his speech last night, you know, if you stayed up that late, we're able to.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, same here. But I mean, even he seemed to be surprised that they were winning the popular
vote. He kind of soft-pedaled it a little bit, I thought, but he said, yeah, we're apparently winning the popular vote.
That's nice to win the popular vote. Like, it is nice. Right. But, you know, going back to that sort of like man thing, you know, like I seem to recall Joe Rogan even being mentioned at one point during that speech.
Yeah, he was. Joe Rogan, great guy. Yeah, so, that sort of thing. Yeah.
So now we have the Joe Rogan effect, apparently, in our presidential politics.
And I've never listened to Joe Rogan's podcast. I don't know if you guys have, but apparently, you know,
it's time to start, Chris.
It's the, it's the bro effect there. I think, right.
There one other, I guess, interesting. A lot of the mainstream analysis says that Harris failed to appeal to the middle of the road voter enough. I would just say that I saw somebody say something interesting to me anyway, which is that Donald Trump apparently didn't even try to appeal. I mean, he made no effort to appeal to any kind of middle of the road voter whatsoever.
He did not moderate his message whatsoever throughout that whole campaign.
No. So whether, I mean, at least on the right, or at least if you're Donald Trump, it doesn't appear that you need to appeal to the moderate voter, which has been really the conventional wisdom in presidential journalism, anyway, presidential media coverage for my lifetime. Whether that still holds true, at least on the right, I would say is definitely in question. And whether the Democrats should continue following that, you know, paying attention to that kind of dogma, I'm not sure.
We are just about out of time, and we're doing a lot of speculating at this point of the broadcast. So it's going to be an interesting period of time we're coming into.
Democracy Now! Will have a lot to say about this in their second hour, which we're going to play. It's not right after Bird Note. It's not Otto's Eclectic Mix. Democracy Now! Has 2 hours of election coverage today. You would have heard the first one at 7 o'clock, and this is a brand new hour that will be airing at 9 here, and we'll start that right after Bird Note. High of 43 today, areas of freezing fog, but then sunny. Looks like it's going to clear up.
We're looking for sun the next couple of days. I saw a high of 50 on Saturday. That'd be balmy, relatively speaking.
Go out and get a tan, I guess.
Hey, if you want to do something fun, come out and see Blurred at the Little Live Radio Hour next Tuesday. Tuesday, a week from yesterday, at 8 o'clock at night. We will be having some fun at 8 o'clock on a Tuesday night. For those of you who are interested in a good time, that'll be at the Panada Little Theater. It's hosted by KRFY. Blurred is a great band, and I'll play some of them later on today.
And you can tune in as well and hear it live over the air.
You sure can.
Or online.
Yep. It'll be right here. However you're listening to us right now, tune in at that time. Any final wisdom? Any final comments in these last 40 seconds before we flip over to Bird Note?
Happy Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever
Wednesday.
Yeah. Happy Wednesday.
It's Wednesday. Hump Day. Once again, local election results. Republicans win all partisan seats in for legislative district in the both representatives and Senate will be Republicans. The Bonner County Commission will be entirely Republican. The Sandpoint local option tax failed to pass. Pondere local option tax failed to pass. West Bonner School District levy failed to pass. Proposition 1 failed to pass. The state constitutional amendment succeeded. We will be seeing a change to the constitution of the state of Idaho.
But no change in effect.
No change in effect, yeah. But explicitly prohibiting non-citizens from voting in the state of Idaho. Those are your local results here on Wednesday, November 6th, 2024. Stay tuned for Bird Note, and then Democracy Now!, and then Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long right here on Panhandle Community Radio. This is 88.5 KRFY, Pondere.